Hey, welcome to the Hive Aside Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Martinez. Today I have co-host Anthony Gaona. And today we have a special guest, Alexei. Guess his last name.
No last name. Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Dude, thanks for coming on. We're really excited about this one. You've become the Twitter, the ex police of fake GPs and all that stuff. So glad this is our first conversation together, but we've been following you for a long time. So I'm glad to open this one up and see where it leads to.
Yeah, same. Don't mean to be a police, but yeah, let's see where it goes.
I actually love it, dude. So one of our best mentors, his name's Corey Thompson. He's a real estate investor out of Dallas, and like he's a guru griller. And he's a man, he'll find somebody and he'll get a hold of them and he'll blast them all over social. He had to even put out a lawsuit because of it.
Yeah. I think my position in the space is tough, right? I really just try. I mean, first of all, I try to be super independent.
Yeah.
Because I don't want, for example, like I probably get 5 to 10 requests a day from GPs asking me to raise money for them. And I just always say no. Because I don't want to be biased towards any one GP or any one deal or any given asset class for that matter, or real estate in general. Like I openly publicly state that I think, you know, a very good chunk of the population probably shouldn't be investing in real estate. They should like just focus on their careers and like put some money in an index fund or whatever. And I don't know, like as far as I'm concerned, I don't think it's for them. Like they're not able to take that level of like sort of binary risk. But, you know, I think some people don't like it, and that's valid. I totally know that, like, not all of my opinions are right. I'm always open to others and happy to debate.
See, I think it's funny because they ask you for questions that they want to hear answers the way they want to hear them, and that you don't necessarily give them the answers they want to hear. So now it's like, oh, come on, man. Like, I wanted to hear the good thing I want to invest in, you know? But high level, let's do, like, a brief, like, 1 minute elevator pitch, what you do, what you've done to kind of give your like authority on the space, because I think you've done a lot of big things and I'm curious to see what you've done. Then we can kind of cover like the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. I mean, I as far as authority goes, I think it's pretty limited. Like I don't really feel authoritative. I feel like I'm learning day to day in many ways. Before this, I did all types of investing on the private markets. And then I guess most relevant to what I'm doing now was leading a 20-person team at a public REIT, which invested in private real estate deals. The 20-person team invested in, I honestly didn't keep track, but certainly over $1 billion in properties. You know, that same team that I led also managed everything that had to do with the portfolio, which by the time I left was around 2,900 properties in the U.S. And, you know, that was like a really phenomenal experience, I think, because it's very tough to sort of balance needing to buy, which is like a very real thing for any asset manager or REIT for that matter, right? Like there's sort of a pressure to buy and grow, right? But at the same time, there's sort of like the risk component of, do you know what you're buying? And are the incentives between you and the seller and or the tenant, right, aligned properly? And, you know, so I basically got really fortunate and was able to cut my teeth across, I think in any given week, we typically had somewhere between 10 deals in the shop that I led. Sometimes it was up to like 20 or 30.
What kind of
deals? All of them were single tenant, but lower middle market. So single tenant, lower middle market, think like anything from a guy that owns his own pizza shop and that's the only thing he runs, all the way to like a KKR-owned private equity firm that has 500 locations all across the U.S., but not including like public companies, for example, or like investment-grade credit, which would be sort of, you know, I think many people would think that's a lot easier. In other words, you sort of buy, I'm going to use Walgreens as an example in a second, I'll tell you why, but like you kind of like use a Walgreens and you're like, that's mailbox money, right? Like you just buy it and it prints money and like you just sleep at night and everything works. The reason why I use Walgreens is one of the many things I learned at this place was, I think credit in terms of business health is very transient. And so Walgreens is a good example. Recently they got downgraded, which essentially means that anyone owns those properties recently got devalued. I mean, the property is now worth less. You know, I don't want to digress, but yeah. So, I mean, so that's kind of my background. In terms of what I'm doing now, I just saw this like missing market, I guess. I don't know how else to say it. I think there's billions that go into the syndicated LP universe more now than ever, in the sense, if you sort of compare like 5 years, today minus 5 years compared to like the 5 years prior to that, like I think things have boomed. I also think a very big chunk of those participants don't come from an investment background, and it's not uncommon for me to have a conversation and give some feedback, and the LP is like, hey, can you remind me what a cap rate is? But an hour before, like they were ready to commit $1 million, which is a very substantial amount to them. So yeah, it felt like this very opaque space that, as far as I know, like at least at the retail level, no one is addressing. And so I decided to go after it and take the hits.
Hey, man, where do you think, we're going to get to how you got your seat right now on X, but where do you think this massive influx of new investors came from? Because that would be a significant jump based on that prediction that you've seen in the last 5 years. Where did all that traffic come from?
I mean, to be candid, I think a decent amount of it has to do with like tech, right? Like if you think about like crowdfunding platforms, those weren't really like a thing 10 years ago, or at least weren't like a very material thing. There's also a lot of, I'll call them fund-of-funds, but many of them aren't true funds. Like they're just syndicating glorified LP position, I'll call it, across a bunch of little LPs. And a lot of those have popped up. And some of those, by the way, have raised billions. Like I'm not talking like small money here. And there's a lot of those, like a lot. Way more than I ever thought existed. And then I think number three is just like, look, I go back to 2021. Mm-hmm. There's no place to put your money. Someone comes to you and says, hey, like I just 3X my investment with this guy and he is my uncle or cousin or whatever. You should trust him. And the person just exited a $20 million. I mean, I'm not making these stories up. Like I've actually heard them. The person exited like a $20 million business and they're like, well, what the hell? Like, I don't know where to put this money. Like, I guess I'll put a few million bucks with this person. It's real estate. So like, I can't lose anything. Like worst case scenario, I just get my money back. Like that's the worst thing that could happen. And in some cases that does okay. In some cases it does really well. And in some cases I get a call and you know, they've lost their few million bucks.
Damn.
That's crazy. One thing I want to talk about this, and I love that you're addressing the situation, is that a lot of people don't have, and they might be an accredited investor, but they don't have any type of investing experience. And then they're throwing around this money thing thinking that real estate doesn't go down, but they don't know what type of investment they're even investing in that real estate. They could be a second position, a third position loan bar, or they could be a connection of the connection, you know, with no security or legality to strike back or anything like that. I think it's such a huge disservice that the GPs aren't educating. And I'm really glad you're doing that as a whole, because I didn't know it was a rampant problem until you brought it up. And then you have all these horror stories and I'm like, okay, this is a big problem that someone needs to address.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll tell you two things. First of all, I mean, I don't think many people will believe this. Most people don't believe most things they say on Twitter. But I think people don't understand how deep this world goes, right? And I think the sentiment when I post something negative is you're like ruining the vibes, so to speak. Like, which, by the way, I'm very cognizant of. I think it's true to some degree.
Ruining the vibes as far as what? Like just like the environment on X, or like ruining the vibe for the GPs like trying to hunt for money?
I think both. Like, you know, you have like an LP there and he, you know, for whatever reason, they're like, let's go stonks and like YOLO a few million bucks with some GP. and all of a sudden this like random ass guy is like posting on Twitter about people losing money. So like it ruins the vibe, man. Like stops it with the negative. I get these DMs and sometimes these comments. Most people have me muted at this point. Some blocked. but like what people don't see is I post that and then I have two different calls in the same day where people have lost millions of dollars. And sometimes it's like 70% of their net worth. And it's some instances it's tied to a one GP. In some instances, it was spread across five different GPs and they all failed.
Damn.
And so I guess my response to those people, you know, the people that sort of my haters, it's just that, like, I mean this in the most, like, sincere way. Like, if there's someone that sees one of my posts and they say, holy blank, I don't think I want to be an LP now because I realize that you can lose money. It's like, I don't think that person should have been an LP in the first place.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
If you're going to be an LP and be completely blind to the fact that you can lose money, I don't think you should be an LP. Right? So, meaning, if my post scares someone off from being an LP, they probably shouldn't be one. You know, and of course, like, you know, the GPs will say, yeah, but like, I'm a great LP. Like, the other guys are bad. And that might be true. But at the end of the day, I still sort of hold on to my comment, you know? So, yeah, I don't know if that helps.
No, I think it's a highlight to inherent risk that most GPs don't disclose what the inherent risks are. And one thing I've been noticing is the higher level I talk to my lenders, I'm glad they're asking me these questions, but they're asking me, what's the worst that can happen and what's the worst that has happened? And a lot of my lenders are asking me that now. And I'm like, really glad they're asking me that, because a lot of our lower tier lenders, they haven't asked me that. None of them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, Anthony raises a lot of money too for us. They haven't been asking, like, what's the worst that can happen? So knowing the good and the bad of it is 100%. It's if you haven't lost money, like, you probably shouldn't be going too heavy into investing, because we've lost money. We've had people steal from us. We've had all the bad things happen to us. So I know what to look for now. And I'm actually glad that now that I'm taking other people's money, I know that I know what to look out for, because I've already lost money, you know?
I would say that, you know, losing money shouldn't be sort of like a prerequisite in order to be an LP investor. But yeah. But I would say that understanding that you can,
yeah,
is very much a prerequisite. And that's why I'm not sort of backing down from, like, the negativity that I really do try to, like, tone it down. I try to, like, not do it every day, you know, but I think it's important. It's important for people to understand what's happening. And I think it's also important for LPs that are sort of retail to have a voice, in a sense. And I think many of them sort of feel like they have a voice through me. Many of them don't want to publicly state what's going on. Maybe they don't have a decent audience. I think my audience isn't massive, but it's something.
Well, who wants to get on a soapbox and say I lost $1 million? Like, no one wants to do that.
Right. Like, I mean, one of them can, you know, create a Twitter account and post it, but no one is going to see it, right? So I think in some sense they feel like their experience at least helped other people. And again, like, at the same time, LP investments are great. Like, otherwise, I wouldn't be in this industry. I think they're awesome. It's just they take work, and if someone, sometimes I get these calls of like, hey, I sold a company for $50 million. Like, I want to place about half into LP investments. Can you tell me where to invest? And my answer is no. Like, I can't work with you. And they're like, well, like, I just don't have time, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, I can't work with you. Like, if you can't spend the time to understand what you're investing in, we're just not good for each other. You know, like, you can invest and sort of feel like you're investing, but really you're just at a casino. At a casino, you know that you're gambling, so you sort of like limit, or at least most people will limit, you know, like, you know, will limit how much they gamble with. But when you're investing, it feels like you're investing. So, like, why should I limit it? So, you know, anyways, yeah.
I mean, you know, just I've never taken anything that I've seen you post as negative, man. So I guess if you're predatory, or if you're uninformed, or you want to be predatory, and you hear somebody like saying, hey, you got to watch out with this stuff, if somebody takes that negative, maybe that speaks to what their intentions are, right? Because, you know, we do a lot of that in the real estate community. It's like, hey, you know, watch out. We did a video on how to not get scammed. So, you know, we do look out for people, man. We try to look out for people. I think we do a pretty good job. We have a mastermind with over 300 people, and there's always about 40 people on the call. I think it was this past Tuesday, we talked about wholesalers or buyers that will, at the very last minute, drop out of the sale, or else try to get a massive price reduction from the seller not because they needed to make the deal work, but just to make more profit. And I said on the call, it's recorded, I said, if I catch anybody in this group doing that, you're out. No warnings. You know, to just unjustifiably just up your profit just because you want to, you know, get the seller because you have them in that position. So we do try to do a little bit of policing ourselves, man, in our own community. And so I'm proud of what you're doing, man. I think it's badass.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And like I said, the biggest reason I want you to come on here is because, like I said, I'm trying to get your voice out there. And I think I mentioned it to you yesterday. I think it's important that I don't care what you invest in. I think one thing I think unique to your skill is that you have diverse knowledge in different asset classes that I don't even know of. I've never even heard of. I know about the credit space and all that stuff, but even that, like, it intrigues me. Like, if a GP is doing credit ratings and all that stuff, they're investing in Walgreens and they have to close 500 locations in 2024. Yeah. Like, you should know what you're investing in.
Dang. Yeah.
So,
but Daniel, it's mailbox money, man.
Oh, it's mailbox. Wait, so let's talk about this.
Until the mail doesn't come.
Have you seen my check?
Let's talk about this. So, like, what you're doing, like consultations, and I think you made a tweet. Like, if you invest $1,000 for a consultation about your type of investment, and it saves you from diving down that road, you mentioned like your little thing, your consultation thing. What type of, and I think you're doing like all different types of stuff, but like what's that consultation look like, and what type of stuff are you educating them on in that thing? Are you looking at their individual GP PPM to kind of poke holes through it they might not even understand where to look?
So I'm not a legal person, and I'm pretty public about that. So like the only time I really look at legal docs is if business terms aren't clear in the deck, which does happen. Like some decks aren't great in terms of outlining fees or the waterfall or whatever, or co-invests, right? So like to the extent that something like that isn't clear, so I'll look at the legal docs. But typically my feedback is very business centric. You know, it's like, and really my goal in the biggest way possible is to just educate them on what they're getting into, the good and the bad. In other words, I think this also gets confused a lot on Twitter. Like, I think people think I'm sort of like anti-LP investing or whatever. Like, I just basically tell people not to invest. But the reality is I never tell people what to do at all. Like, I don't think I have legal rights to do that even.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I do is I try to educate them on, like, this looks pretty good. This is interesting. You know, like, this assumption, if this assumption doesn't work out, here's what might happen. And make sure that they understand that, right? And what comes out of those discussions is, it's pretty binary, actually. Either the LP will be like, oh, yeah, like I was expecting something along these lines. I knew what I was getting into. And I'm pretty sure I understand the mechanics of this transaction and the risk that I'm taking on. Thank you for the additional color. Like, let me ask a few more questions from the GP to just make sure I understand some of your questions. And then they invest. Like, and that's totally on them. The other side is, you know, some LPs are like, I mean, some of the people go from, wait, like, I don't understand, but like, what do you have like blurb in here that says that if the cap rates don't move in the right direction, you might lose all your money. And here's how that would happen. And they're like, I don't understand. Like, I thought real estate is safe and like, you can't lose money. Like, and so like when you have those conversations, then the LP is just like, oh, like I am not ready to risk capital. Mm-hmm. Right. And to me, that the success isn't that they invested or they didn't invest. The success is that they simply understand what they're doing. Like to me, that's a success. It's just educating them on the possibilities. And that in and of itself is, I think, a lot more complex than people think. Especially when you're dealing with retail. Like if you go to like a sophisticated institutional LP, like they don't need me, right? Because they already think about this stuff and they know that the downside exists and they're trying to compensate for it. But an average retail person doesn't.
So do you have anything that you provide to people that you coach or that you sit with? Like, do you have some kind of like cheat sheet to like, hey, watch out for these 10 red flags or anything like that?
So I write weekly on a blog. It's just lplessons.substack.com. One of the articles there that's open for anyone to read is Top 15 Syndication Mistakes. I think you can just Google it and you'll find it. And that is meant to be essentially a summary of, like, if you look at all the deals that I've seen that went bad, and then you sort of like pull up the deck that they invested based on 2 years earlier, you'll find some combination of these 15. It might be three of them, it might be 10 of them, right? But you'll start seeing a decent chunk of them, right? And one of the like really intricate things about what I do and LP investing in general, and I would say investing as a whole, is no transaction is going to be perfect, right? And so one of the things that I talk about in that article is I didn't name this top 15 red flags for a reason, because emotionally and like psychologically, people are like, oh, like I found that their fee is 4%, and you said it should be 1-3%. Therefore, this is a bad deal, like pass, right? Or I found that like the IRR is 9%, and you said like it's pretty normal to be in 10-15% range. And they're like, oh, I don't want to do that. And in both of those cases, you can easily understand why, like, for example, 4% on a $100 million deal is insane. 4% on a $1 million deal is not so insane, right? And like there's context, right? And the context is really important. And sometimes like the different variables also matter. So for example, you know, people talk about prefs and like what the pref should be, and someone sees that there's no pref and they're like, oh, no pref, forget about it. Like I'm out. And it's like, well, did you look at the next slide where they said that there's like a 50% co-invest, which, and usually there isn't one that of that size. And there's also a 90-10 split. Did you see that? And they're like, oh, no, I never got to that. Like, I just got turned off by the fact that there's no pref. And it's like, well, that's not investing. Like, you can't like, look at one variable and just sort of be turned off, yeah. Right? You can sort of, like, see, what's the word? Like, you can see several variables, right? Like, several of these, I guess you can call them pink flags, maybe, or, like, reasons to stop and think, which is what I like really called them in an article. And look, at some point, no doubt, like if you have other deals to look at some point, you start like, oh man, like this is a lot of like pink things in one, you know, in one deck. And at some point you might pass, right? But yeah, that's sort of like the best advice I've given is just like that list of top 15. And I've also been very hesitant. I actually wrote about this last night. I've been very hesitant to give guidance on like one or two things that people should look out for, because again, the same thing happens. People listen to that and they're like, oh, so like if there's no cap rate compression, this deal is great. It's like, no, that's not what I said, right? Or like, or if like if the fees are good, or like sometimes I had one LP that reached out and they're like, I found this indication with no fees, that means it's good, right? I'm like, well, no, like that's just one thing. And I almost wonder how the GP is paying everyone without any fees, right? Anyways, I digress.
Dude, those are all excellent, excellent points, man. If you've never invested money in your life and you're looking at these things, you have no idea what you're looking at, right? And if you're just going off of the two or three basic rules, like you said, like how much am I going to get back? What's the term? And there's little things that you can see that say, hey, something's wrong with this deck. But if you've never seen one before at all, you don't know even know what to go off of. Because these decks look pretty convincing. Some of them look great.
I would say further, it's not that... some of them look great. Some of them don't look so great, mm-hmm. Which is also okay, by the way. Like, some people are not so good at, like, making a pretty deck, which is okay. Like, that, you know, in many ways, people, I think, discount the fact that a GP is an investor and not a marketer. And those two are very different mindsets that certainly, you know, they have an overlap. Right. Don't get me wrong, but like they're different. Yeah. I think people tend to overreact to variables that in the grand scheme of things should be kind of irrelevant.
But they still should know what they mean in the grand scheme of things too.
Of course. Of course. But that look, if you should try your best to realize that you don't know stuff, right? That's really important in this world. And be honest about it. Because what tends to happen, I've spoken to many LPs that are just like, first of all, many of them are afraid to ask questions. So they're just like, whatever, like I'll just throw a few hundred grand. Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? And, you know, the answer is you can lose it all. Right. I mean, that's the worst thing that can happen. Now, what can be even worse, which I've also seen, is some people not only get behind the LP position, but they also start guaranteeing the debt for the GP. And then it gets even worse. And then it's like, well, I don't know, it's real estate. Like, what's the difference? Like, yeah, like, yeah. So, like, people, to your point, Anthony and Daniel, both of you, like, people don't know what they're doing. Like, to your earlier point, Daniel, like, they don't know the difference between first position and the second position. Many, like, debt investments are presented as equity investments. LPs don't even know the difference. Sometimes GPs don't know the difference, which, and I'll just say it publicly, like, that's okay. Like, everyone has to learn, right? Yeah. But the point is, you just have to understand that this is like a new landscape. And if you don't understand what you're investing in, it's okay to not invest. Like, yeah. It's okay. It's okay to just pass and look at five other ones. I mean, when I was in the institutional world, we probably bought one out of every 10, maybe 20 deals that we looked at. And like, there was a filtering process to even get to that. And I don't think in the LP world, it should be so different. You know, like, people get the sense of like, they got a deal on their lap and it's like, oh, like, this is it. Like, should I put $1 million or 500? You know, like, I got to invest. Like, I might not hear from the GP again. You know, whatever. Like, you have to like stay. You have to realize that the worst thing that happens is you put this in 5% treasuries, right? Like, it's not so bad.
Yeah. So how, I have to, a double-edged question. How can GPs find LPs and how can LPs find GPs?
It's a good question. There's no, I've honestly been very surprised by those guys. There's no obvious answers to this, which is kind of shocking. Like, if I speak to LPs all the time that have millions to place and they don't know where to find GPs. What I typically tell them to do is just try to actively find them, right? But like, when you're a passive investor, I think it's normal to be active in terms of reviewing deals, but sometimes it's very tough for people to find time to like reach out to GPs and reach out to a lot of them, right? And so it becomes sort of like this weird thing where it was supposed to be like passive investments, but they become very active on the front end. And I'm a big proponent of that once you have a deck in front of you, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem is getting those decks in front of you is unusually, strangely, like, difficult, even though you have, like, GPs on the other side that are like, I need LPs. Like, I can't lose. Like, it's so hard to raise money, right? And so I'll have both of these conversations. And, I'm trying to figure out a way if I can help. Now, I don't think I'm anywhere near the scale where like I can make a real dent in this marketplace, but like I think at some point I might build a solution for it.
You said build a solution?
I might. Yeah, I'm certainly like thinking about it.
Like what?
I mean, I think it could just even, I mean, let's start it super simple. Like if I'm an LP and I live in Phoenix, Arizona, and I have $20 million to place, I should have a pretty easily accessible database of all GPs who invest in Arizona. Like that's not like so complicated. You're talking about like filtering an Excel file or an other table, right?
Yeah.
And you should also, I don't know, like if you're obsessed, you live in Phoenix, but you're obsessed with Florida, you should be able to find all the GPs who invest in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And within those GPs that invest in Florida, you might only care about the ones that are doing land deals, for example. Like, I don't care about multifamily and industrial and blah, blah, blah. Like, I just want to talk to the 20 people that do land in Florida. And then within those, I only want to talk to people that have been doing this for 10 years, let's say. Again, like, all of this stuff feels very simple to build. The challenge with it is it needs a decent amount of monitoring to make sure that the data is clean and, like, that there is, I guess, honesty behind the content. And it's a bit of a network on both sides. Like, you need GPs to be interested in this and LPs to be interested in this. And I just think I need a much larger audience for that to be, like, really effective.
Well, we'd be happy to team up on that, man. We're continuing to grow the audience. And, we like to work with noble causes. So if you ever decide to put something like that together, man, we would love to be on that front first phone call.
And we'd love to help, too. I think it's the biggest thing. I think if more GPs or LPs came together and offered to help, I think it would become fruitful to the whole marketplace. And that's, I think it's the giving part of the side of the whole side of it.
I agree. I mean, it's wild to me that it's so hard to do this, you know, like, and because I literally, at least once a day, I speak to LPs that are frustrated about not being able to place capital. And by the way, it's not because they're looking at 20 deals and all of them are bad. It's that they only have a few deals and some of them they already placed money into, but they just don't want to overexpose themselves to a given deal. Right.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, you have GPs that are like screaming about money. Like they have so many deals, but they can't raise enough money. And yeah, I mean, it's like a pretty apparent thing for me. I just, it's only me in my guest house. So I'm not quite ready for it yet.
Can we hear some, I know we got a couple minutes left, but can we hear some bad stories and some good stories of LP and GP investments? I know you got a couple of those, if you can share any. I don't know if you can share any.
Yeah, so I mean, good stories. I've heard many instances of people going in and like, let's say starting with 100 grand, in some cases 50. And then over the course of like 8-ish years, they grew that to multi-$1 million, which is, I mean, pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of that was done through 1031s and whatnot. And then on the bad side, I mean, I'll just tell you about an email I got, I think it was yesterday. Sometimes I'll get these emails that are like, hey, I heard about you, and this one started the same way. And then it just like ended up with, it just kept getting worse. It was like, hey, like I invested into deals and they all, like I invested into deals and all of them zeroed out. And I'm like, oh man, like I just hate like seeing that. Yeah. And then it's like,
is there any one asset class that crashes more than others, like apartments versus houses versus commercial versus like crypto or
stocks or?
Let me answer that at the end. Yeah, but it's a complicated answer, but let me answer that in the end. So like it was like, hey, like I had these two deals that went bad, and I was like, oh man, okay, like I have an idea of how to answer that and explain it and help. And then the person was like, well, I also have, you know, these other six deals that all have capital calls, and I think like my equity is impaired. I just need help like figuring out what's going on. And then he says, like, and I have a bunch of others, but those don't have capital calls currently, but I also have concerns. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, like I sit there and I'm just like, I wonder, like, I don't have no idea how much was put into each one relative to the net worth. It's somewhat surprisingly, like, I think only two of them were with the same sponsor. Many of them were in different asset classes. And so when you see stuff like that, I guess it just reminds me that like there's a lot of pain out there. And that's just sort of like the small segment of people that are actually, A, know about me, and B, are actually willing to reach out.
Yeah.
Now, so Anthony, going back to your question, I think a lot of distress has to do with being a forced seller at the wrong time. I mean, that's just sort of like a reality, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of what's going on now is rate caps are expiring or debt is coming to a maturity, and sort of like you basically don't have a choice and you sort of need to make a capital decision. In terms of the stories, I think most of what I hear and advise on is probably multifamily, like probably about 50%, 60%. But I don't think that means anything, and I'll tell you why. Because if you think about like the past 5 years, let's say, or forget 5 years, like forget the past 2 years, like maybe 2018 to 2022, right? Like that 4-year period. And you put an Excel spreadsheet in your mind, like every single syndication that occurred in that space, right? Retail, forget about like institutional stuff. I'm just talking about retail, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answers to this, actually. I've never seen it. I would love to see it. So if anyone's listening and they have an answer, please reach out. But my hunch is an overwhelming majority of the capital during that period went into multifamily. Like mm-hmm. my hunch would be like somewhere between 60 to 80%. Like that would be my hunch. And the reason why that matters is because when I get 60 to 80% of requests being multifamily, that just makes sense. Like from a statistics perspective, you would expect a lot more of the distress to be in multifamily because there's a lot more LPs in multifamily.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I mean, hopefully that answers your question.
No, that was a great answer, man. Yeah. And that's kind of, I guess that's where we've seen the most blood in this market. And I know we got to kind of stop short here, and we usually like to go about an hour, but I think we need part two of this, because the more you talk, the more questions I have, man. So if you're open to it, I think we would like to do a round two with you.
Yeah, for sure we can.
Okay, so where can people find you online? And man, I have more questions, but I'm going to let you go.
I know. I'm taking notes here.
So find me online. I mean, my name is pretty unique. So you can Google me and find me on Twitter and LinkedIn. I post there, I at least try to several times a day. And then in terms of my weekly work, I try to publish on these topics at lplessons.substack.com.
There you go. Awesome. Thanks. It's been amazing. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, very pleased to meet you, man. It's hard to grab somebody's personality based on a whole series of tweets or X's, right? So just getting to know you better, man. Like, I feel your vibe, and yeah, I would love to do this again, man.
Yeah, maybe I should have come with like a Halloween costume, you know, with like with like some, you know, some scary face and whatever.
You should have came with it with a judge's outfit.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how people perceive me for some reason.
Everybody here, thanks for listening. We appreciate you. Go like, share, subscribe. Go check out Lesky. LP Lessons.substack.com. Go check them out. We appreciate you. Thanks for coming on. Bye, guys.